Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Catch a Wave with the Surfin' Cowgirl, only on LA Talk Radio.
Howdy, 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 y'all. Welcome to Catch a Wave with the Surfin' Cowgirl, where the miracles can always be found in the timing. Kim, are you out across there?
I am.
Okay, Okay, thanks for being here today. We're going to go straight to Wish on Wednesday and our charitable philanthropic work and donation is going to go to Operation Gratitude. This is care packages for first responders. And, you know, we're having extreme difficulty with containing California fires. And then we've also had a sporadic, erratic freak tornado incident across the Highland Park, Preston Hollow area. So we wanted to make our Wish on Wednesday and our charitable donation to Operation Gratitude. And at this time, this organization has sent out over $2.4 million care packet, $2.4 million care packages. So 2.4 million care packages have been sent out. And these contain like protein bars and cleaning wipes and just very valuable instrumental tools for our first responders. And right now, our wishes and our prayers and our unity and agreement and just power of protection prayer and is with our firemen and our first responders. We can't say enough about these people and their animals, their dogs that they use to find and recover people. And so many, many, many prayers as Americans. It's times in like these that we join together. And if we can't agree on anything, we can agree on the protection and the power and the prayer for our people that go before us. And I always say others far more worthy bear the cross I own. And our military men, our reserve, you know, military folks, our first responders, our firemen, our servants in our community, they make life good and safe and great for us as in our communities. So Operation Gratitude, we love the work you're doing, and that's our Wish on Wednesday. So I know you've gathered a little bit of information with what's going on with these fires and the tornado in Dallas. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, out here in California, as you know, we're just burning up out here. We haven't had any moisture in so long, and we're just a ripe little tinderbox for anything. Mm. So what goes along with the fires is the rolling blackouts that are happening up here. And it's to prevent more fires due to things being on the line. The winds kick up, the lines
trash,
come down.
Trash, debris,
and then you
yes.
have another. Then you have another fire. So we've been dealing with that a lot. Had a lot of people in and out of my house that I've been opening up my house to showers and doing laundry, and we've been cooking meals every night for several families. So,
and I love that you're making it count.
Crazy.
Yeah, in your community and in your area, you are making it count, and that's wonderful.
Well, just, you know, you got to help those that don't have anything else. You know,
they're,
they
need,
don't have
they're
water,
in need.
They don't have power.
Yeah,
so
they're in need.
Come on over. My
yes.
house, ni casa, su casa.
Yes.
But as far as the actual fires go, the biggest one is up in Sonoma County. It's called the Kincaid Fire. It's just outside of in the wine country, north of San Francisco. And right now they have, the fire has grown to 76,000 acres. It's approximately 117 square miles. They have it about 30% contained as of this morning. And, you know, they're just trying to, they made it tremendous progress yesterday and the day before to get to 30%. Because when it started, they were at 5% containment. So the one that is down there by you is that's really big and has had the majority of the evacuations is the Getty Fire. That's only consumed 600 acres, but you have to take into consideration how dense the population is down there compared to up here. And also they have a fire up around Santa Clarita, which is in northern LA, and that one's called the Tick Fire. That one is about 4,600 acres, so, you know, a little less densely populated, more brush to burn, and so that one's grown to about 4,600 acres. And so that's kind of what's going on there. We're just trying to do everything we can to help those around us that need a little something.
Helping hand.
Blackouts
and I understand that you're an animal enthusiast, activist. I don't know if I want to say activist. You're all about taking care of people and kids and animals. So tell us a little bit how you helped out this week with the animal shelter that was threatened by fire. I know you went and got some puppies. You're playing foster parents to these puppies.
Yes. A couple of years ago, well, a little over a year ago, I adopted a little miniature blue heeler from an organization called Dogwood Animal Rescue. And it's headed up by Shirley Ziegler. She is a now retired animal control officer for Sonoma County. And there were so many dogs in need, she started Dogwood Animal Rescue. And so this is where I adopted Easter from. And I've stayed in really good contact with them. And they were evacuated. They are actually in a little town called Sebastopol, which is just outside of Santa Rosa. As you know, Santa Rosa completely burned up 2 years ago. They got evacuated again. Luckily for Dogwood, they have a mobile vet trailer that they take into areas of people with lower incomes, and they do free or very low cost spay and neuter clinics. And so they have this amazing trailer with over 30 cages for animals to be recovering from their spay and neuter while they're out and about. And so they loaded up the trailer at 2 o'clock in the morning and evacuated. I reached out to Shirley and said, hey, if you guys need any help, I know you have over 30 dogs and cats in that trailer, we'll be happy to help. And she goes, yes, please. So we headed out to go get a little mama long-haired dachshund and her 6 little babies. And on our trip over there, it was pretty hairy. Interstate 80, which, you know, is a major corridor here in between Sacramento and San Francisco, was shut down because there was a fire along the freeway. Diverted you off onto side streets, so you can imagine the absolute mess that was trying to navigate around it. Got over to Interstate 5. It was shut down due to fires as well. So we're able to take back roads over and get around the fires. Added about 2 hours to our trip to Napa. Again, on our trip, we're receiving text messages and phone calls from people helping us navigate because there was another fire down around San Francisco in a town called Vallejo. And it was right beside the Carquinez Bridge. They had to shut down the Carquinez Bridge, which is, you know, is again another major corridor. So we jump off to another highway and we are able to get through Napa and up to Glenpool where we were able to get the puppies. By the time we got the puppies loaded and everything and headed back home, we were able to get home in an hour and a half, when it took us 3.5 hours to get there.
Oh, gosh.
So God's grace. Absolutely.
And kudos to you.
And we have 7 little babies.
Yeah, for taking care of those 7 little babies. What statistics did you find out on the tornado in Preston Hollow? I've been keeping up with it, but I wanted the latest updates, if you could find that.
Okay. I Hold on just a second. Let's talk about something else and I'll come back to that.
Okay.
Trying to pull it up and it's not wanting to come up.
Okay. I'm doing the same thing. And that's why I'm like old school, right? You know, writing it down. So during this time, you know, like I said, we're just gathering in our pop. I like to call it my pop, my place of power, my place of peace. And we're just in unity and agreement for safety and everyone in their homes. You know, we had this, it was just a freakish occurrence of this tornado in Preston Hollow there in Dallas in October. And it was like, I went to bed and the next day I got up and this tornado had torn down through there. And so I started calling all of my friends and texting in Dallas to make sure that everyone was okay. And it was just the weirdest thing, you know. I guess that's why they call it natural disaster. But, you know, so I had a lot of interesting conversation this week. And we talked about how as Americans, we come together in power of agreement. And even though I have a great friend that I chat with a lot, and his name is Charles. And it's really interesting because Charles is a guy and I'm a gal, and Charles is a Democrat and I'm a Republican. And so, you know, and we don't really discuss anything except our love and our hope and our grace that we walk in and our gratitude as Americans. And we live in the greatest country in the universe. I mean, you know, we're just proud to be Americans, and we want to make our time on this earth count, and we want to put our footprint firmly stamped, you know, that we left behind a legacy of goodness and grace. And so we talked about it this week, and we talked about, you know, how to come together as Americans. And we just agreed that, you know, the best place to be would be in grace and unity. And so, you know, here, after we're overcoming these devastating occurrences of natural disaster, our prayer and our pop, our place of peace, our power of agreement in this place of positivity, of restoration after the setback, is the comeback. I mean, we're right now we're like praying for containment and protection of the fires in agreement, but we've got cleanup to do after the tornadoes. And, you know, yeah. In retrospect and reflecting back over the last couple of months, you know, we two violent random shootings occurred. And so as Americans, we can at least join together in a place of power, of agreement, in positive word and positive energy, in grace and humility and strength, in truth and light, in love, in faith and hope. And it is our desire to co-create, not just coexist, but co-create a better tomorrow for our children and our children's children. And, you know, what are we leaving behind? What is our message? What is our legacy? What's our footprint going to be? What are we leaving for our children and our children's children? So if we can just agree in love and in grace, you know, the greatest of these is love. God is love. We can come from many, 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 many different belief systems, many cultures, many different backgrounds. But what Charles and I talked about is that, okay, let's just, you know, lay the axe at the root. Let's just get down to it and make it count. And that would be in a place of love and grace with one another. And we don't just want to transcend for a better world. We just don't want to transcend and create a better world. I think we want to ascend, because, you know, transcend is, in my mind, it's changing. You're moving, you're changing. But ascending, I think, would be a better word, a better thought, because we're rising up. And all of us want our children to have a better, we want to preserve, conserve. And so in that place of grace and in that place of love, hopefully we're coexisting in a society that typically is polarized in duality. You know, so we've got the left and the right, and we talk about how do you go down the middle? How does everyone come together and go down the middle? And, you know, it's known as the golden way, the golden mean. And I thought, okay, how do you go down the middle and everyone come together in a place of unity, mm-hmm. in a place of grace and love? And this, as Americans, you got to let go of thinking that you know it all and you're right and your way is the way. And if it ain't your way, you know, hit the highway. You better have some flex. You better have some adaptability. You better have some grace, because you don't know what you don't know. And how do you know what you don't know until you realize you don't know it all? And you know something new.
Wow, that's a tongue twister.
Well, yeah, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know that you don't know it till you do know. And what I do know is that I don't know much. But what I do know is that love and grace are a good place to be. And it's funny just how, you know, everything you ever needed to know you learned in kindergarten. You learn how to survive in kindergarten. You learn how to coexist in kindergarten. You learn how to pick up after yourself, be nice, be courteous, be kind, take turns, respect order and authority, leave it better than you found it. You know, I had a great kindergarten.
Absolutely.
You know, like when you come in, leave it better than you found it. Put things back in order. And, you know, that's why I wanted to talk today about, you know, contentment versus striving. You know, when you get into comparison and striving, then they say that's suffering. Because when you're wanting something that you don't have, well, then you've just put pressure on yourself and you're unhappy until you get it. And so that's a whole nother different portion. But right now, you know, for restoration and power of agreement and unity, I think two good places to firmly set your feet in are in love and grace. And in that love and grace for one another, we are coexisting, and we're going to have to co-create. We're going to have to, there we go. My phone wouldn't open up. I was like, okay, great. Now I'm having techie difficulties. But, you know, so I'm like, okay, in today, we're gathering in prayer in a place of grace, humility, strength, love, light, faith, and hope, that we can have protection and containment of these fires, that we can have restoration for our communities and our nation in a place of grace and love, and that we can agree as a society to come together and get away from our polarized duality, our mindset of you know, we've got all these polarized dualists. And so that's what I love about talking to different people and being open to their ideas and their belief system. But I can't let go of my foundational belief system, because if I do one thing, I hope that I stay authentic. And I hope I stand for something, or I'll fall for anything. And so,
absolutely.
And, you know, and I just go back to, how do we get everyone to come together as Americans? And we talked about this, you know, it's the golden way, the golden mean. And I kept thinking, where have I heard that before? And it dawned on me, seventh grade math class. Seventh grade math class, it was, and not to be confused with pi, 3.141592, but there's a golden ratio, and it's 1.3. It's like the rule of thirds. And so I am no mathematician. But what's funny, you know, one of my favorite, you know, kind of transferring into my favorite things, my oldest child, who's a far better songwriter than I ever will be, and that's our goal, for our children to be better, he wrote a song called Back in the Middle. And this song had huge success regionally. And I, you know, it's just a country boot scootin' song. And it says, maybe, baby, someday we can meet back in the middle. And I was like, you nailed it. You nailed it. You know, back in the middle, that's where we've got to meet each other. And if you ever look at that diagram of the yin and the yang, do you notice it's not cut down the middle? You notice that yin and yang symbol, it's got a swerve in it. It's got an S in it. And the reason it's got that S in it is because what it symbolizes is when you cut down through the middle, you're cutting through the heart of mankind. And you're taking a slice of it. So you want to be real careful not to cut the heart out of the man. Does that make sense? So you better tend to the left, and you better tend to the right, and you better do it with love and grace, because you're going to cut the heart out of the man. And as Americans, I just think you got to let go of your polarized duality, your stance of I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, and you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. You better lay down your sword, and you better come together. You better get a hold of someone's hand, and you better pray in unity and love and grace and hope and faith that we can coexist and co-create and ascend for a better tomorrow for our children and our children's children. And I think about, how are you going to make it count? How are you going to make it count? And I butchered this statement last week, and I'll get a redo. I'm going to give myself a redo. So less government, fewer taxes, more local support. And I'm going to add control to that. In your community, are you doing your part? Are you sitting on your butt on the couch ordering in Uber Eats? And, you know, I always say, everybody's throwing popcorn and beer bottles at Casey at the bat. You know, everybody from the cheap seats is critiquing. Get up off the couch, get out of your house, and do something. Be the change that you want to see. Put your money where your mouth is. And, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. And I'm going back to my belief system, and it's like, God will bless whatever you do, and whatever you do when you have nothing, whatever you give when you have a small portion, that is indicative of what you're going to do when you have a large portion. And so, you know, I can't always give in large portion. So at the end of the year, you know, I try to bless more heavily and do more philanthropic works. But every week I do Wish on Wednesday. And I know our office in Amarillo, Texas does Wish on Wednesday. And we give to things monthly, things weekly. But I always like, don't. And I'm speaking to millennials here, I guess, you know, because we've made their life better and easier. And now what are you going to do with the ladder that we built you? I hope you climb it. I hope you climb it and go next level. I hope you don't sit on your butt and watch Netflix and chill. And that's a whole other story. I hope you don't sit on your butt and order in Uber Eats. I hope you get up and get that second job and get that third job. I hope you go to work. I hope you find that work ethic that, you know, your mother and father and your grandfather and your grandmother had, because that's what's going to take you. You know, our whole idea, making it better for our children and our children's children, is not for them to do less. It's for them to do more with what we gave them to work for. You know, the ladder to transcend and ascend to next level. And, you know, I look at people, you know, I look at companies like Tesla. I look at companies like Apple. And, you know, I'm just taken aback at these pioneers and what they've done. And, you know, I hope that we just keep on keeping on. And, you know, that's what we're here for, is to make, you know, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Be in the moment. Attitude of gratitude, place of peace, power of agreement in the moment. But don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Keep, you know, keep on keeping on, keep on getting up. And, you know, I just feel like, as long as you're getting up and working and lifting up your brother and loving your neighbor and celebrating life and a better life. And, you know, then, you know, maybe we're doing okay. Maybe we're doing okay. But, you know, I had wanted to touch a little bit on contentment versus striving. And what made me think about this was this week, you know, someone had mentioned to me, you know, there's only two root emotions, and they're love and fear. And I was like, okay, well, where does anger come into play? And they're like, well, anger is a sub emotion of fear. And I was like, I don't know about that. I mean, the only thing I'm fearful of is what I'm going to do to you again, what I'm going to do to you when you make me angry again. You know, I'm just kind of, you know, take the bull by the horns, take control of the situation. If you don't like how you're being treated, change it. Don't be a victim. Don't have pity mentality. But also, but then I did realize, you know, a lot of times that fear goes into terror, which can trigger your anger. So I researched it a little bit, and yeah, the two root emotions are fear and love. And so, of course, we don't want to operate in fear. So that's why we go back to love and grace. But let me say this, you know, everything you need to know, you learned in kindergarten. And it makes me think about I had a little cousin named Lynn, and Lynn was little. And when we started kindergarten, he had a very, very early birthday and I had late. So I went to kindergarten and I was like a year older. I was like one of the three oldest people in my class in kindergarten. So I was like big. And when you're 5 and 6, that can make a lot of difference in your size. So Lynn didn't want to go to kindergarten, and Lynn was my cousin and we were big buds. And everybody was like, oh, you're going to be just fine. You're going to go with Jenny. Because, like, Jenny's the heavy. You know, Jenny's your bodyguard. And so we went to kindergarten, and we did just fine. And let me tell you, nobody messed with Lynn. Nobody messed with Lynn. And I made sure of it. And it was like Lynn became our little mascot, and we loved Lynn, and we all took care of Lynn because he was the little guy. And he was scared and timid and didn't want to go to kindergarten. And he ended up being, you know, being our mascot, and he was the most popular kid in the room. But it's kind of like walk softly and carry a big stick, you know, wise as a serpent, yep, harmless yep, as yep. a dove. So, you know, there we go. We got to meet in the middle. We got to have balance. The greatest offense, you know, the answer is a fabulous defense. The best offense is your greatest defense. And so it goes back to the yin and the yang and everything in balance, you know, back in the middle. And so I was saying, you know, to Charles, as we were talking, how do you get everyone to come together? And how, you know, and a very, very wise man taught me this. He said, you know, if truth, and you know, the truth, the way and the light, if truth is a highway, there's two lanes of perspective. There's the left lane and the right lane. Sometimes you're on a one way. You're all going the same way. In the truth, on the path, in the journey. So there's like the left lane truth, that's your perspective. There's the right lane truth, that's my perspective, you know, whatever, whichever lane you're in. But down the middle, those two yellow lines, that's the absolute truth. Sometimes the lane.
Okay, so I gotta interrupt here.
Okay, you got something good?
When you were talking earlier, I was like, yeah, my mom always taught me there's your side of the story, there's their side of the story, and the truth is in the middle.
Yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt too well ago to say that, and then bam,
I brought
here
it.
You are.
I brought
and
it.
And I was like, hallelujah, you said it.
I brought it home.
Exactly what I was thinking. Yes, you brought it home. You nailed it. Exactly what I was thinking. And, you know, you always think you're mom is the smartest person in the room. I think my mom is the smartest person in the room.
Your mom is pretty smart.
I have carried that with me throughout life as whenever I'm evaluating what's going on and not that people come to me for a lot of advice, but when people come to me for advice, And I always think, okay, all right, this is their opinion.
Mm-hmm. Perspective.
Now look at the other side.
Yes.
Look at the other side, the flip side of this. And somewhere in the middle, there's, you know, going to be the reality of what really happened in here. So I've just always tried to carry that with me, and you brought it. So hallelujah, thank you.
Yeah, and what is true is, like, they have their perception and interpretation of what is happening and what happened, and then you have yours and you have your perspective. And so as Americans, we each have our stance, we each have our situation, we each have our problems, we each have our goals. And but we're all wanting, I think, to move upward and onward into the provision, into, I mean, there's people out there who do not have a bed to sleep in at night. There are people who are being abused, children who are being abused, children who have, and, you know, it astonished me. I didn't understand this. And so we did a little research, and we did a little work, and we did a little philanthropic, you know, charitable, some investigation just there in Amarillo, Texas. And what we learned is that there's two and a half beds available for every homeless person in Amarillo, Texas. Now, why won't they go in? Why are they out there freezing to death in the elements? And, you know, and how do you encourage them and help them to come in and take a hold of just better provision and protection? And I know here in Los Angeles, the homeless down at the Azusa Street, there's the Azusa Street Mission, which that's the cradle of the Pentecost. And, you know, and we're working right now. We're gathering materials. You know, we're going to do socks. We're going to do pre-pasted toothbrushes. But we're going to add to the complimentary charitable services down there. And, you know, two blocks to the south, I believe, is Skid Row. And, you know, where all the tents and the homeless are. And this is a big, big issue in Los Angeles County, the homeless. And so, you know, without strong-arming people, without bullying them, how do you encourage them? How do you help them to take a hold? And the answer that comes back again and again and again is love. You love them in the truth and the light and the grace of God. And, you know, my people that are encouraging me and cheering me on, they sometimes say, stay away from religion, stay away from religious talk, stay away from politics, stay away from political talk. But I have a made up mind that I'm going to be authentic. So I can't stray from my belief system. And my belief, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying it's what I was taught. It's my training. Don't forget your training. And my training is in the truth and the light and the love and the grace and the hope and the faith of the Word of God. So I can't stray from that too much. And then, you know, it's hard when you want to address social needs and issues to not have some political talk. And, you know, and that took me. So just out of your inner navigational system, I call it my Sacagawea skills. A great leader knows, goes, and shows the way. And I can say Sacagawea leading skills because I am a whole bunch of Cherokee Indian. And my people were removed off of their reservations. And, you know, and that brings me back to a great defense. And I'm going to see if I can pull this up on my phone. You know, here we're talking about, you know, should you strive for something better? Should you be content? And it scares me to just sit down and be content because, you know, this is a poem. I want to share this poem. And this was from a pastor in he was, this is response to the people of Germany during the Nazi propaganda. You know, they were the crimes committed against the Jews and such. And this is a powerful message that applies. And I feel like we have to pay attention to it. And so this is a German pastor that wrote this poem. And it spoke volumes to me. And it's called First They Came. In Germany, they came first for the communists. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Now, he lived through this. So he's speaking in first person, okay? Then they came for the Jews. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the trade unionists. And I didn't speak up once again because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Catholics. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't, was not. Oh, and I did not speak up because I was a Protestant. Then they came for me. And by that time, there was no one left to speak up.
Yep.
And so there you go. It scares me. And I guess I'm operating in fear. And yes, I'm angry. Yes, I'm frustrated of the shootings. You know, why in God's name would American... Why is anybody shooting anybody? Why? You know, but what makes people accept help when they need it? What makes you speak up and make a difference and make a change? What is, you know, what's going to prompt you to make it count? And I feel like we can't just be content and do nothing, because if we don't have a great defense, then we have weakened our offense. And so,
So,
you know, I'm always about take charge, be in control of your destiny, get up, make a difference, be the change that you want to see, and, you know, show no weakness. And we go back to, you know, in like children, you can always just watch children and, you know, or like I've always, have you seen when there's like chickens, little chickens, and if one of them's weak and sick, the other one pecks on it and picks on it.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't, you know, I guess it's like natural selection. I don't know. Or like we do cattle, you do cattle. So when you have a sick calf in the pen, they'll kick it. They're like, what? He's over there, snotty nose, heaving. He's a lunger. He's got pneumonia. The other, you know, so it's like the strong prey on the weak. And they did a study on this, and I haven't had a lot of time to. They did the Milgram experiment and the Stanford Prison experiment. And in the Stanford Prison experiment, they just put people in there. And they gave half of them the role as the guards and half of them the role as the prisoners. Well, before long, these are just normal people in an experiment, in a trial. Well, guess what happened? The guards started dominating and bullying and abusing the prisoners because they took on that role. And it's the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. So we go back to that yin and that yang diagram. And so we have to have clear intentions so we are not pulled down a destructive path by the circumstances surrounding us and pressure from authorities and government propaganda. Government propaganda. I'm going to say that again. These experiments clearly showed, and I'm getting this from, I'll have to give it credit here in a second. These experiments of the Stanford Prison Experiment and the Milgram Experiment, these were done on British Broadcasting and ABC News. They showed these. And these experiments clearly showed that both creative and destructive capabilities from within us as humans, there became a line dividing the good and evil cuts through the every heart of the human being. And I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Solzhenitsyn's quote, Solzhenitsyn, I can't say it. But anyway, that's that yin and that yang and being down the middle, the golden way. You better be careful. You better have clear intentions of what you're doing and where you're going. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Yes, be happy in an attitude of gratitude and a place of contentment where you are today, but don't be pulled down and sucked into a destructive, you know, polarized position of duality because of circumstances, pressures from authorities, and government propaganda. And I've always thought, this is just me. This is just crazy me talking. What would happen? I'm a dreamer. I'm a visionary. What would happen if we took all this money, billions of dollars that we used in campaigning, and we helped somebody with it? You know, you when you look at our candidates, and sometimes
I'm going to interrupt this here for a second.
Okay,
look at Canada.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it.
You're only allowed to campaign for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You're only allowed to campaign for 6 weeks. You have to have your campaign in order, and you've got 6 weeks to plead your case to the people and go to the polls. And so they don't have the billions of dollars spent on campaigns across America like we do.
And then we can get into a whole other something, which I don't want to get into, but, you know, it's like a capitalist society. I mean, you know, my friend's daughter, she was in Canada, and she needed healthcare attention, and she couldn't get it. And so they had to send a private plane to get her and take her to New York for surgery. So there we go. Okay, that's a prime example of, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And you have to be really careful, because we want to meet in the middle and we want to go the golden way. We want everybody to come together, but somebody better be striving. Somebody better, you know, always be closing. Somebody better be striving for perfection and next level. Somebody better be, making some money to provide services for those that can't help themselves. So, you know, you don't ever want to step on anyone's toes, you know, but our world is shifting at such an increasing speed that we're outgrowing these old dualistic ways. And we gotta come up with a new paradigm. I mean, we gotta come up with a new pattern. And, you know, without the darkness, you can't shine out in the light. We have to kind of accept that there's good and there's bad, there's light and there's dark. You know, there's valuable aspects of living in a world with human values. And so we do need to tear down old ways. You know, like, we have to destroy old buildings, and we have to create change, and we have to build new. And, you know, it's just like we have to have that dark, fertile soil to sow our seeds in, to grow. And, you know, but in valued respects of life, we must learn and grow and work together and find our common humanity. And so I'm looking for the balance of that golden way to where we meet in that place of love and grace, and we work together to not just transcend but ascend in common humanity, regardless of our belief systems, and leave the world a better place than we found it. And so I literally had to, like, text a few of my friends, because I've always been confused about this, and maybe I'm just in denial. Like, okay, so, yeah, because, you know, like, just ignore what you don't like. You know, sometimes that works for a minute, right? Not so much. So I said, okay, I'm not a yuppie, and I don't think I'm a yuppie. I know I'm not a baby boomer. I know I'm not a millennial. So what am I? Because I'm a 1969 model. I was born in 1969. And, you know, and I can remember the boomers, the baby boomers. I can remember the yuppies. And then, you know, of course, our children are millennials. So a couple of my friends texted back, and they're like, you're Generation X. And I was like, I know why I don't remember that, because I really don't like it. Because, you know, sometimes the X represents evil, and sometimes the X represents love. So that's better. But we're Generation X. And so, Kim, you and I are Generation X. And so how it's like I knew that, but I forgot it. But, you know, so how are we leaving things better? And that's a big question. And so talk to me. What did you come up with about contentment versus striving? Did you have anything?
Well, oh yeah. Yeah. That's some good stuff there.
Thought provoking. Okay.
So
let's hear it.
First off is one thing that I always think about. Contentment is an attitude that says I will be satisfied with what God gives me.
Attitude of gratitude. Okay. Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Took the words out of my mouth again. I have to stop doing that.
Attitude of gratitude.
Here's another part of it. Contentment does not mean that I desire nothing, but rather it is the simple decision to be happy with what I have.
Amen.
Doesn't mean that you don't keep trying.
Okay, great.
And keep striving.
Okay, great.
But be thankful for what you have.
Yes.
You know, there's so many. It's like, I fight this battle with my son, and it's like, can you just be happy
for a minute?
Second?
For a minute.
Without coming back to me for something else.
Uh-huh.
Like, just be happy with what you have. And so I fight this battle with him, and I try not to dull him down to where he doesn't have
desire,
a go-getter attitude,
exactly,
and all that kind of stuff. But I think it goes along with appreciation.
Yes,
you need to be appreciative
for
what you have and find gratitude in that before you hit me up for something else.
Or go do it for yourself. Go get it for yourself. Go make it happen. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, like striving versus contentment, that yin and that yang, and
yeah,
finding that happy middle balance. Okay, go on.
So, but I did look up for some scriptures, and there's a few that just really jumped out at me.
Okay.
About contentment and gratitude.
Okay.
And
please share.
Here's one from Philippians 4:11.
Yes.
I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances.
Okay, your joy. That's that place of peace,
yeah,
and standing in,
yeah,
your joy.
Place,
yes,
of peace. Place of peace.
Place of peace.
And another one is that godliness with contentment is great gain.
Say that again.
Godliness with contentment is great gain. So with God and being content with what you have, you're going to gain so much more. Because I think it's a lot about perspective as well.
Absolutely.
You know, if you have a perspective that you will receive God's will, then your life is going to be so much more full.
The blessing. The separation and the sanctification. Here I go back to my root belief system. The separation. Okay, so let's just give ourselves permission. When you have no hope, you've got this promise. And the promise is of the provision as a child of the Most High God. My God in heaven, do you know how many times that has pulled me out of the trenches? When I have fallen short of the glory of God, which it happens about daily, you know, you have to die daily.
Absolutely.
That means layer down. That means get down on your knees and surrender. I have to go back to my belief system. You know, I love this. Dig the well before you come thirsty. Preparation. The greatest
Absolutely.
Offense is a fabulous defense. Dig the well before you find yourself have gone thirsty. And, you know, I love that. And it just, you know, the other thing I wanted to throw in there is all compromise is based on give and take, but there can be no compromise on fundamentals. That's from Gandhi. All compromise is based on give and take, but there can be no compromise on fundamentals. And so I love that. And I just, you know, we have burned through, which I'm so glad we filled 50 minutes. I hope somebody got something. I hope we made it count.
Burn through, no pun intended.
Yeah, run through. You know, I hope somebody got something uplifting. I hope somebody got something that was a blessing. And we're just in agreement for protection and containment over these fires. We're in agreement for a gathering together, for a unity and a building up, a moving upward and onward of provision for our neighbors in Dallas, Texas. You know, the tornado is over and the cleanup has begun. And I'm going to say something about making it count and proud to be American. Proud to be an American is that we have each other, and we may not have it all together, but baby, together we have it all. I don't want to live anywhere else. I don't want to live anywhere else. We as Americans right now, we may not have it all together, but darling, together we have it all. I am hopeful for tomorrow. I am content today in an attitude of gratitude, but I won't stop thinking about tomorrow. I want to leave it better place than I found it today. Kim, thank you.
What do you have when you lose hope?
Huh? Yeah, what do you have? That's why
what do you have when you lose hope? You have nothing.
Nothing. And so that's why we must be a prisoner of hope. Kim, thank you for joining me, and I hope that we can do it again next week, and you and your family have a wonderful trip. I know you're going to Montana. Enjoy your vacation, and thanks again
for being here
at Catch a Wave and the miracles and the timing. Be blessed, everyone. Stay safe, and God bless.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Catch a Wave with the Surf and Cowgirl, only on LA Talk Radio.